NF San Luis Obispo's Progressive Talk.
CBS News, I'm Dan Revive, live in Washington, where Congress ended its work year by getting something done, a two-month extension of the payroll tax discount. On a $50,000 salary, that saves the employee about $20 a week. President Obama has just signed that and left for vacation in Hawaii to catch up with his wife and two daughters.
I want to wish everybody a Merry Christmas, happy holidays. A happy new year.
He thanked Americans for emailing, tweeting, and calling to put pressure on Congress. Today's House and Senate sessions were sparsely attended.
Some important business didn't take long.
The House stands adjourned until 1 p.m. on Tuesday, December 27th, 2011.
The House did okay the extension of the cut in payroll taxes after Speaker John Boehner decided the pressure had been applied to go along with what the Senate had overwhelmingly passed.
The American people's voice was heard. Their concerns were heard, and we have responded.
That's Maryland Democrat Steny Hoyer. Paychecks won't shrink come the new year, and unemployment benefits will continue for millions of Americans as Congress will work on the problem later. Dave Barrett, CBS News.
In Syria, two suicide car bombers killed over 40 people. The government says it shows that protesters are terrorists. Dissidents blame the Syrian government. Here in the U.S., in terms of weather, holiday travel should be smooth. Listen to Dan Peterson of the National Weather Service.
Steady as she goes, pretty dry, and no storms in the offing. So it's really not going to be a situation where we're looking at any major storms over the next several days.
Government figures show that consumer spending grew, but just a tiny bit in November, up 0.1%. Ryan Sweet is an economist at Moody's.
Consumers, they don't want to cut back. They want to continue to spend. But unfortunately, the job market's still very weak, and income growth is sluggish at best. So consumers are digging deep into their savings to finance their consumption.
The price of oil has been creeping upward, just touching $100 a barrel today. Analyst Peter Butel.
2012 is looking like it's going to be a year of a big trade-off. We're going to have more jobs. We're going to have a stronger economy. We're going to make more money, but we're going to spend that money on oil. On gasoline.
Now hear a kid who's well-spoken, but maybe not as excited as you'd expect when a 10-year-old gets to speak to his dad who's up in orbit.
How are you?
I'm doing good.
Astronaut Don Pettit on the phone.
Hey, I feel like I'm back home.
His son's name is Evan. He lives in Silverton, Oregon.
Well, I just wanted to wish you good luck on your flight.
Hey, well, thank you.
Three astronauts, including Pettit, arrived at the International Space Station today, bringing the mixed crew back up to six. They got there on a Soyuz from Russia. A happy pre-holiday for the stock market. The Dow Jones up by 90 points so far today. The NASDAQ index is up by 14 points. This is CBS News.
Bonus round time. If you can't teach an old dog new tricks, what can you teach him?
Conversational French?
Correct.
Ooh.
Gingerbread men are...
Gingerbread boys, all grown up.
Correct. True or false? Netflix lets you watch movies instantly through your game console or other devices.
Duh. True.
Correct! Watch unlimited TV episodes and movies for only $8 a month from Netflix. See terms of use.
Hey, did I just win that new car over there?
No, I did. If you're like me, you have personal belongings that you hold dear. Belongings you can't live without. It's precisely why GEICO makes it easy to get renter's insurance for a really low rate. Renters can protect all their personal belongings for as little as $12 a month. What belongings do I hold dear? This karaoke machine and my vinyl record collection. You fancy a tune? Nah, I shouldn't. All right then. Are you going to Scarborough Fair?
Visit GEICO.com to see how affordable renter's insurance can be.
The Iowa caucuses are a week from Tuesday. Republicans will actually start voting for whichever presidential candidate they prefer. The Associated Press says Mitt Romney's family foundation has donated to conservative causes and to the George W. Bush Presidential Library. But the Romney campaign says that's not connected with trying to win endorsements. The elder former president, George H.W. Bush, did this week express a preference for Romney. He also said he likes Rick Perry, but Perry hasn't picked up traction. In Europe, folks from countries in the south with weak economies are on the move. CBS's Henry Mulak reports from Berlin.
New figures show the debt crisis has sparked a mass migration of people to Germany in hopes of finding work. The country's Federal Office of Statistics reports a 20% increase in people from countries like Greece and Spain in the first half of the year. Nearly 500,000 people trying to find employment.
Henry Mulak reporting from Germany. I'm Dan Raviv, CBS News.
What you're about to hear are the real experiences of women over 40 who finally lost weight by becoming hormonally balanced again.
I'm actually slim. Me, slim.
I can fit in my skinny jeans again.
I look in the mirror now, and I love what I see.
Their secret is Amberin, the revolutionary formula for women over 40 that balances hormones. The leading cause of weight gain over 40 is hormonal imbalance. Until you balance your hormones, losing weight can be practically impossible. But Amberin restores hormonal balance naturally, so you can finally lose the weight, even that stubborn belly fat. Plus, Amberin eliminates other symptoms of hormonal aging, like hot flashes, night sweats, low libido, difficulty concentrating, and more. Be one of the first 50 callers right now, and they'll send you a complimentary risk-free trial with a 30-day supply. Free. Just cover shipping and handling. Call 1-800-644-4025. That's 1-800-644-4025. 1-800-644-4025.
It is Friday, so Karen Vealey should be in to help us talk about stuff today. And also Jimmy D might stop by, and we'll talk to him. I didn't call him yet.
And now, here's Bill Binica.
I should have called Jim. I didn't call him this morning. We were busy, busy. We have little rascals over, and then their dad yesterday called Nancy and said, do you think you could take the kids Christmas shopping? Because he had to be in Santa Barbara today. And so Nancy goes, sure. So he asked the kid, he said, how many kids do you have to buy, how many people do you have to buy for relatives and friends? 19. It was 19. Like, what? Say what? This is going to take until about midnight, I think, before we get done. All right, let me do one other thing before we get going here. We have an alert, welcome home mission at the San Luis Obispo Airport today. And his name is Speck Pittenger. He's a paratrooper with the 82nd Airborne. And is coming home for Christmas. His wife and mother asking us to give him a huge slow welcome. He's from Atascadero. So it's a slow airport today, and you should arrive there about 2:10 or so, and the flight arrives at 2:38. Sometimes it's early, sometimes it's late. And bring a flag with you and bring a friend and meet and greet one of our heroes. Thank you. That's what's going on at the airport. Meanwhile, in Congress, we got the payroll tax extension for 2 months. 60 days. I bet their appraisal rating just skyrockets after that.
The opinions expressed on Talk is Cheaper, bills, the callers, and the occasional stray that wanders in the studio, they're not necessarily those of the owners, management, sponsors, staff, delivery people, janitorial service. Consider this a personal invitation to pick up the phone and exercise your constitutional right to express your opinion.
Go, Mo. Mo barbecue, please.
Mo ribs, Mo chicken, Mo pork, Mo beef, Mo burgers, Mo onion rings, Mo potato chips, Mo beans, Mo fried green tomatoes.
Mo barbecue, please.
Mo slaw, Mo tater salad, Mo house salad, Mo Cobb salad, Mo Caesar salad, and Mo's Calypso salad. Mo sodas, Mo brewskis, Mo lemonade, Mo iced tea.
Mo barbecue, please.
At Osos in Monterey and San Luis Obispo and Pismo, it's the bomb. Pomeroy's most bodacious beach barbecue, babies.
Mo barbecue, please.
Have you ever worked with Coastal Computers? Coastal Computers is here for the small business. The small business that needs computers, technology, and networking to stay even and be competitive. They're here for the small business that can't afford to hire a computer staff. They're here for the small business that needs to get it right the first time, who can't afford the pain and the horror stories that we've all heard about. Coastal Computers has been making the tough stuff easy for over 25 years with lots of happy clients. They're worth a call at 543-9047. Call 543-9047. Coastal Computers, Microsoft, Intel, and networking specialists. 543-9047. Or visit ccslo.com. ccslo.com right now. The small business favorite's favorite. ccslo.com. Coastal Computers.
All right, Let's do our happy birthdays and what happened on this day in history. And then Karen Vealey's in here with me, and we'll get to her and what's going on, calcoastnews.com, right after we do this. Our flashback in history, our highlight, according to the Tribune today, on December 23rd, 1941, during World War II, American forces on Wake Island surrendered to the Japanese. In 1783, George Washington resigned as commander-in-chief of the Continental Army and retired to his home at Mount Vernon in Virginia, of course. In 1823, the poem Account of a Visit from St. Nicholas was published anonymously in the Troy, New York Sentinel. The verse, most popularly known as 'Twas the Night Before Christmas, was later attributed to Clement Moore. 1986, the experimental airplane Voyager, piloted by Dick Rattan and Gene Yeager, completed the first non-stop, non-fueled, round-the-world flight as it returned safely to Edwards Air Force Base. Birthdays today, Gerald O'Loughlin is 90, actor comedian Harry Shearer is 68, actress Susan Lucci is 65, rock singer Eddie Vedder is 47, the First Lady of France, Carla Bruni Sarkozy, is 44. We'll say happy birthday to them and happy birthday to you if it is yours.
Happy birthday to you.
Get hooked on Charter and go where satellite can't. Get hooked on Charter Digital. Choice, convenience, clarity, control. Get hooked on Charter High Speed on your internet. It's faster, it's more convenient, and it's a lot easier. Get hooked on Charter DVR. Record programs when you want to see them. Watch them back when you want to see them. Get hooked on Charter HDTV and see the cleanest, clearest picture you've ever seen on TV. Get hooked on Charter and go where satellite can't. Call 1-866-332-6749 today. That's 1-866-332-6749. Charter. Get hooked.
Karen Vealey from CalCoastNews.com in the studio with me on this Friday. And Karen, hi. We got Christmas coming up here. We're all excited about that. All right, let me tell you what's going on here a little bit, and so we know. And let me give you phone numbers first. 786-2578. That's a local number. 786-2578. We have a toll free number if you'd like. 866-937-1340. That's 866-937-1340. And we're underway with a big story that hit the hit CalCoastNews.com this morning already. And I'll let you start off and take it away, kid.
This was by Daniel Blackburn, and it is a story, again, about the Cambria School District. And for those that don't remember, the Adams family, the superintendent, Chris Adams, and his wife, Julie Adams, were accused of, in the past, of applying for the free lunch program for their children when they make about $20,000 a month. But the interesting thing that's recently come out, and partially this is something Dan's been working on for about 2 months, but last week Julie Adams sent out a very long email that is available on calcoastnews.com. You can read the entire email, a scathing email toward parents and people coming to speak at board meetings, which she thought that they were out of control at the board meetings. Some of the complaints that they've been making are the fact that Julie and her father-in-law both get income from the district by contracts given to them by her husband, Chris Adams. For example, Chris gave his father, they had a couple different electrician firms that were local up there that they were giving work, that had won the bids to do contracting electrical work. So instead, he's bringing his father up from Redding, California to do all the electrical work now. His wife owns Adams Consulting, and she gets money for doing consulting, educational consulting for the district. Some are saying this is against the law because it fails to follow the laws that require open bidding and that you do not give contracts to family members. So it's kind of an interesting, but the letter, the scathing letter, one of the things that happened before she put out the letter is somebody wrote in, a gentleman called Pedro Gomez, wrote in a fabulous thing saying how great Chris Adams was and how great the area there was. Well, the only problem is there doesn't appear to be anybody named Pedro Gomez in Cambria. And the fax machine that he used to send the fax to the Cambria paper is a fax machine out of Redding, California, at a number that was owned by Chris Adams, the superintendent. But she mentions in her letter this guy, Pedro Gomez, likes the way the school is running.
You know, this is let's define some things here. First off, this is a 3,200 word email that she sent out. It's on calcoastnews.com. You can read the whole thing. It's page after page after page after page. Anyway, it's very interesting. It would seem unusual to me to have a school district do business with its own family members.
Yeah.
You know, and you're talking about a superintendent doing business with his wife and his father-in-law, correct?
No, his father.
His father.
Yeah.
So her father-in-law. So there's two things here. There's one is who can you conduct business with. The other thing is this bidding process, which you and I seem to bump into all the time with these walls.
Yeah.
And you know the thing we don't know a lot of times is, and it's a pain in the neck to find out because it's harder than you can know sometimes to find this stuff out, is what. Under what circumstance does something have to go out to bid, and for how much money does it have to be worth?
And that's actually very clear. State law says exactly at what point it goes out to bid and when it can be approved, at what level. So, for example, I think if it's under $5,000, different people can approve it. If it's up to, my numbers are going to be off.
Right, okay.
But if it's like $15,000, then it has to be approved by between 5 and 15 by the head of a department, or maybe it is up to 5,000, and over 5,000 has to go in front of a board.
See, because a lot of school districts, of course, have purchasing agents.
Yes.
You know, and so I've done business with them in the past. And so, you know, there was a certain leeway we had where if we could sell them something under this bid number, you know, I think it was around $5,000 back then, too. And so we tried to design tons of things that sold for $4,000. And so that was the thing. But I hadn't heard before of... and you could see a conflict of interest. You know, here's the part that people sometimes they don't get. So let's say you take Julie Adams, and let's say she legitimately is a consultant that, you know, can do good works for the district. It doesn't matter. You know, the appearance of propriety is shot, you know, when you're doing business with your own family. And I think that the sad part about the Adams is that I don't think they understand that.
And this is government. It's not even legal. Yep. You know, there are laws against giving contracts to family members. This isn't just, it looks bad. There are laws against it. Now, the attorney that the Adams have hired through the district is saying it's fine because she's not directly getting paid.
How's she getting paid?
Well, there's a nonprofit run out of Redding, California, out of Long Beach, and it's called the Association of Junior High Schools, and then she gets paid through the Association of High Schools. But if you call the Association of High Schools nonprofit, the phone, if it isn't answered, it's answered with a voice message that says you've reached Julie Andrews of Andrews Educational Consulting. So the phone number, you know, the phone into this nonprofit is answered by her.
And what do we know about the California League of High Schools?
There, it's an offshoot of the California League of Junior High Schools, which is run by a gentleman that is also under fire in Long Beach currently because people are alleging that he is funneling work to his wife, who is the main employee of the California Association of Junior High Schools, of Junior High Schools. They're doing the high school one. So it's kind of a, I've looked up their fundraising and that type of thing and the things that they do.
All right, so here this attorney Munoz said that the service provided by Julie Adams in the district on behalf of the California League of High Schools are considered a remote interest under California's conflict of interest statutes. Therefore, he added, the district is permitted to contract for services with Julie Adams. So what he's saying is that by going through this California League of High Schools, this organization, what you've done is you've added a layer of insulation basically between, you know, directly between her husband and herself. But it's a very thin layer of anything, as far as I can see.
And I wonder if it would stand by a legal challenge. I wonder if And the sad thing is our district attorney doesn't usually go after this type of thing. But if there was a legal challenge to this, would his claim do it? But the other issue that's even more egregious is the father's electrical business. There were local electricians that had the contract. As soon as Chris Adams took over the school district, he started giving the work to his father. And now his father does all the electrical work for the district. And his office is out of Reading. The gentleman isn't even local.
And then and we go back to, but I think they explain this. If you remember, the Coast Unified School District and the Adams family were the people that, you know, had their kids enrolled in the free lunch program at the school. And then they said, though, and then this could be so. I mean, I don't know how they do it. This could be so. The fact of the matter is that, you know, if maybe how it works is everybody does fill out a form and everybody submits a form and then they take away the ones that don't count. I don't know exactly why you would do it that way, but
here's the problem is the school district then decides who is approved, and some school districts appear to be approving people that don't deserve to be approved. They wrote down something like $20,000 in monthly income, and their district approved them. And I've been told that some districts just appear to approve everybody because they get more grants and more federal funds and a number of different things for the school by having more children that show poverty. So there's a reason for doing that other than trying to get it doesn't usually appear to be trying to get a free lunch.
The free lunch isn't the issue.
Yeah, no, it's
the free, the free lunch is funding from the government, basically.
Yes.
Okay.
Our tax dollars.
Such a small, nice little place up there too. You know?
And I like I just think it's just that the name they picked, if they did pick it. And again, the letter to the Cambrian that just said, oh, how fabulous Chris Adams was, and how great the school district was being run under Chris Adams, and how great they were for the community and families from the Gomez family, Pedro Gomez. There's no Pedro Gomez with children going to the district. There doesn't appear to be a Pedro Gomez that has any, you know, phones or anything in Cambria. And then they fax it from a Reading fax machine using that has under Chris Adams' own name. So it's kind of, but his wife in this letter also mentions, you know, this, what a name, Pedro Gomez.
That's right, Pedro, yeah, Pedro's up there. All right, let's move to another story because this is a and there's another thing too. I'm hoping while you're sitting here in front of me, I'm going to remember Tom, the engineer, and I were talking yesterday about something that happened a while back, and we don't know whatever came of it.
Okay.
I got to remember what the thing was that we were talking about. Is Tom here? Tommy here? I try to think what it was we were talking about, but it's a real big issue. And I don't know if it was revisited, but anyway, this is interesting because I read some more news today about this, and the peace officers buying and selling assault weapons. California peace officers have bought more than 7,600 assault weapons. They're outlawed for civilians in the decades since state lawmakers allowed the practice. Now, I had no idea that law enforcement people could buy automatic weapons.
There was a law about a decade ago that allowed them to do it, and some are saying the law shouldn't be there.
What's it based on?
It's based on that they're only allowed to use them for practices of law enforcement. But for example, I read an unbelievable article about I think it's Fargo, North Dakota. You get this little town without hardly any crime. And they have been going after federal funds, and they have got one of the most armed police departments with semi-automatic weapons and grenades and, you know, these big assault trucks and all this stuff. And I think it's like a tank. It looks like a tank. All they ever use that for is during fairs and parades and stuff. Everybody looks at it. But there appears to be a lot of fear after 9/11, and let's get our police departments all armed up and super. But the other thing is, just because you're a police officer, should you be having a semi-automatic weapon in your household?
No, not a semi-automatic, because you can have a semi-automatic,
an automatic
weapon. So, and here's where, and let me just say this too, because this is where a lot of times I see confusion with journalism, and they'll say, you know, they have an assault type weapon. something that looks like something else doesn't make it an assault weapon. It makes it a semi-automatic weapon, which is legal, and automatic weapon, which is not legal. Now, the thing that makes this even more fascinating is that they have to have permission from whomever, whatever their authority they're under, to buy one, but I don't think that's probably hard to get.
Yeah.
Okay, so then the thing is they're supposed to give them up upon retirement. Now there's an issue I was reading in the news that they're saying they don't want to give them up in retirement. They want to be able to keep them.
So that would put police officers, retired police officers, above the general public.
Well, in a position that is hard to fathom, that, you know, what the necessity would be. And the interesting thing is these a lot of these automatic weapons, as you've indicated, are being bought by the police themselves.
Yes.
Yeah. I mean, I want police to protect themselves, and, you know, off-duty cops usually have a gun on them and all that kind of stuff, and I think there's nothing wrong with that. I appreciate that they do it, actually, to tell you the truth. I'm glad they're there. But automatic weapons are a whole other matter. I don't, you know, it's like, well, what is it that's going to occur to with you that a semi-automatic weapon wouldn't do just as well?
And then you also have the issue, what if this person passes away? And their family doesn't realize, hey, this is an illegal gun. I mean, you're going to end up with a lot of weapons that aren't allowed by the general public. And I don't think you should be able to say this portion of the population has different laws than the rest of the population. The other interesting thing is the reason this is being visited is police officers not doing legal things with gun sales. And even locally, the reason this came about was there's a federal investigation into two law enforcement officials in the Southern California. But here locally, remember, Chief Lisa Solomon did not legally register her gun. There was contentions that she got it somehow through the DA's office. She had a husband that worked there. He got it from the DA's office. Then she got it through a divorce, which isn't even legal. It's not one of those things you can just say, I want that gun during the divorce. But she never correctly registered it. This was a few years ago, for those that don't remember.
Oh, Lisa Solomon of the Paso PD.
But at the same time, Chief Mulhall gave it back to her, didn't follow the law. You can't give somebody back an unregistered gun. And he found her. The interesting thing is how they realized it was her gun. They were going after a couple of possible robbers and found the gun with Lisa Solomon's card inside the holster. But anyway.
And then here's another part of this thing that's really weird. Jim Mulhall, who resigned earlier this year, started dealing guns for profit in 1989. What kind of guns? Just guns themselves?
And he just sells guns right out of his home. And he's done this while he was practicing chief police. He had a gun dealing business out of his home, making between $100,000 and $170,000 a year, according to online sources.
Okay, but we're not going to suggest that those are automatic weapons, right?
No, but it goes back to you have law enforcement that really is into the. The reason I put that out there is because they're saying more and more law enforcement are getting into gun dealing, and they're getting into the gun business. And it's interesting because we do have we had a chief of police here doing a gun business out of his home on the side.
Here's the thing. By itself, I don't know. The way I see this is that there's two ways of looking at it. Is, you know, are law enforcement people creating part of the problem of, you know, the guns on the street situation, or you certainly are allowed to have a part-time business out of your home, whether you're a cop or whatever you are. So, you know, I don't find fault with that per se. Now, on the brighter note, if this exists, I don't know, though. You'd have to ask Jim Mulhall. You know, are they more careful who they sell guns to?
Well, and that's what the interesting thing is. He didn't follow the law in returning the gun to Lisa Solomon. The law absolutely says you cannot return an unregistered gun. So this is a gun dealer and a chief of police failing to follow gun laws.
Well, do you think, okay, but let me ask this question. Do you think that, I know what you're saying as far as the law, but do you imagine that the gun was handed back to Lisa Solomon and with the express idea of you get this registered?
I don't. I have no idea.
We
she did. They called her that night, probably 1, 2 in the morning. I was told she was called after the arrest, and she went right down to her department, and that's when she actually reported. She hadn't even reported her gun stolen as required. So this whole thing was done strangely. But I do think he said, you know, you need to say this gun's missing before we give it back to you. So she did run down and say it was missing, and they just handed it to her.
So here's where we get. Remember, we got into this. We touched on this before when we brought this subject up about, you know, you say, well, doesn't a gun have to be registered? And I said, you know, it does not. You know, if you today, as of 2011, you know, and 5 years ago, you go and you buy a gun, and then it has to be registered. But all the guns that were sold since the Revolutionary War, you know, all those guns are supposed to be registered. But who's going to make you go do it? You know, unless you fall into, out of step with the law and they, you know, search your house or whatever and find them, then you're going to get nailed for having unregistered weapons. But otherwise, you know, I would just imagine there's just dozens upon thousands upon thousands of unregistered guns. I can't imagine somebody has a gun that didn't have to register it. I'd be just surprised how many people would even imagine saying, okay, I'm going to go register this gun now. I just don't think they do it. I can't imagine it myself. But anyway, that's me. So that's an interesting story there all by itself. Other things are going on with CalcoasNews.com, and there are many. Let me give you phone numbers again. Oh, we got to take a break. We got to take a break, kid. 786-2578, 786-2578, or 1-866-937-1340. Your comments are certainly welcome, and we'd love to hear from you if you'd like to give us a holler. 786-2578 or 1-866-937-1340.
At Flooring Discount Center's new location in Morro Bay, you'll have four times the floor space to browse and find even better deals than before. Flooring Discount Center has prices that are 30 to 50% off normal retail pricing and a vast array of mid-range to high-end flooring, hardwood and bamboo, laminate, vinyl, porcelain and ceramic tile, wool and conventional carpeting, core and seagrass, wood and faux shutters. With the holidays here, you want your home to look fantastic and get the best price to boot. With over 23 years in the flooring business, owner Ethan Pettinger is the person to take care of all your flooring questions, problems, and needs. If the name sounds familiar, it's because the Pettinger family is known for their many years at Scrubby and Lloyd's Cafe in San Luis Obispo. Their little hole-in-the-wall cafe make the best burgers in town, so you know you can trust them to give you the quality and price of a lifetime. Look at over 4,500 samples and marvel at the selection. So if carpet or flooring is what you need, come on in to the new location of Flooring Discount Center, Harbor and Morro Bay Boulevard in Morro Bay.
Ring in the new year at the Shumash Casino Resort during our free, fun, and funky New Year's Eve dance party. Featuring 70s disco tribute band, The Boogie Nights. And totally awesome 80s band, The Spasmatics. Boogie down as we count down to 2012 during a fun-filled flashback to the 70s and 80s with wild costumes and dance moves. It's all free with your Club Shoemash card. Don't miss our exciting New Year's Eve dance party on Saturday, December 31st, starting at 9 p.m. Only at the Shoemash Casino Resort.
We are here, we are here, we are here. Bill Benica and Karen Mealy from CalcoastNews.com. I haven't come up yet in my small radio brain with this, whatever it is that I was supposed to follow up with you on. But I will tell you a story. But let me throw a story in that's not in Calcoast News, because it wouldn't be, but an amazing story that was on CNN this morning. A girl who was 5 years old in 1994, she was 5 years old when the tsunami hit Indonesia.
Yeah.
Have you heard this?
No.
She was pulled from her mother's arms, and they assumed drowned. You know, they were trying to get away, and the water overtook them, and they assumed drowned. She's just turned up. I mean, she's been living somewhere else with other people, assuming that her mother was dead. And she's now, you know, it's been 8 years. So she's 13 years old, and the family identified her by a mole or a birthmark or something she had. So this whole, I don't know the gist. They didn't give more details about the story yet, but I'm waiting to see what that is.
Well,
but
that's
what a
amazing.
Weird story. Yeah, what a strange story that is.
Very heartwarming.
All right. Yeah, I mean, it's like great news. Who would expect? All right. We have we have more fun going on the Central Coast, by gosh. The city that never sleeps, I'll tell you, the coast that never sleeps. Contentious claims of culture and sexual discrimination and harassment result in the first of three proposed lawsuits against the city of Aurora Grande. Its police department and Chief Steve Annibale wind this way through the system. Now, this had a really kind of a strange twist to it, because here the woman files a suit, Officer Kimberly Martin files a
yeah.
suit, and then Annibale says that at some point they go to her and they say they offered this guy who was doing the harassing a retirement and everything, and city officials admonished the woman for making the allegations, the lawsuit says. So they basically said we'll let you go, and you know, we'll just say goodbye to you. But at the same time, they're going to the woman filing the complaint and saying, and this is not a position that they should be in to be saying this to this person, guess what? You know, you shouldn't be doing this. Well,
it was Mayor Tony Ferrara, and he's got a reputation for getting involved. And there are absolute laws against micromanaging. Council members and mayors are not supposed to go to staff, neither are supervisors. And a lot of them, especially when they're new, will cross the line. Bruce Gibson tried to run the county when they took David Edge out. He was calling county departments and saying, I don't want anybody talking about this, and micromanaging, that's not legal. I remember I called a county council, and I said, you know, I'd like to ask you about this. This is not legal. About 4 hours later, he said he's not doing it anymore, and we put in a temporary manager, because that's what the law says they have to do. But Tony Ferrara, I've talked to contractors that said they go to meetings to talk to Adams, and Tony will walk in and go, this is the way this is going to be, and that's not okay.
Even much as I suppose any mayor would love it to be that way, but that's not the way the whole system works.
But yeah, and there are two other people that are working on lawsuits now. There are things that you have to do. You have to slowly go about, and not slowly, but it takes time. You have to first file a claim with the city, hoping they'll pay. When they don't, then you can file a lawsuit.
She's we're still getting over this kennel cough that she has. So she's doing the best she can.
It's
permanent. Do you need more water? Should we get you more water? We need more water. Well, we'll figure it out. We'll do it. Okay. So why are there three separate lawsuits going on?
There's one already filed, and this is the interesting thing. It was impossible to find. I took me a week to pull the lawsuit. I went in, and it doesn't show up on the computer at the courthouse. And I guess they say that the tech guys, for some reason, there's some lawsuits that they accidentally don't put in right, so you can't find them. And the only way to find them, then you go up and ask at the desk, they can't find them. And on my third trip over, a lady in the back room that has a different computer system was able to find it. But the odd thing was, I finally get this. I've been trying to get this for a week. I finally get it Friday afternoon. And later on that afternoon, every other media in town had it. It still wasn't on the computer. It kind of surprised me. Because I'd been working on this for quite some time. But the
is there someone at the county courthouse that doesn't like you specifically?
I'm sure there's a lot of people that don't like
me. I have a feeling, but you know, it seems to me that you know there's an illegal attempt to block information that is supposed to be released to the public that you're trying to obtain that they don't seem to be very willing to be.
Well, see, no one can find these things though. Adam Hill's divorce still doesn't show. You have to know the number or do a different way. But you just type in Adam Hill, it doesn't show, and people should be able to pull up lawsuits easily. It shouldn't be this difficult. They are looking at putting a new system in about a year, and if that happens, it should be a whole lot easier. But it does, you know, it just very often when there's a public official involved in a sexual claim or a divorce, it doesn't show. And it's tough, and it's very hard as a media to try to do your job and keep the public informed when the system isn't working the way it's supposed to. But
either that or the system is working the way they want it to. That's what I'm not sure of.
Yeah, I'm not sure either. But
well,
that's
disturbing.
It bothers me. And I wonder how many things the public never finds out about because the system works this way.
Well, I mean, if at the very least what they could have is if you have someone's name and you don't have a case number, and if they can't find the case number, how are you supposed to know the case number?
I know.
So it would seem to me that they would have a system where if you typed in Bill Benica, that and maybe just the case number would come up, and then you'd have the case number, so you could follow it from there.
Well, they supposedly have that system, but for some reason, certain cases don't get added to it. They do have that system. I go in all the time. But it's some cases just don't show. And again, back to the case of the officer, she is claiming that after Anabali came in 2007, that rules changed and women started being treated very differently and that she started being discriminated along with other women. And I think there's going to be a number of men also supporting them in this, saying, hey, we were told to treat women subordinates different, to have different rules for them. And, for example, they went into their locker room, and all their pictures had been taken off their lockers and thrown in a box. They were taken into an office and given them and said, no more of this. The men are allowed to have photos in their lockers and do that. It's different for the women's locker room. They were all out at a shooting range, just officers, and very, very hot, and they had their shirts on with the bulletproof vest over it, you know, the whole kit and caboodle. So the men were allowed to take their shirts and their vests off and have T-shirts on. The women were told that was inappropriate for them. And they had to keep their shirt and vest on. So the women have, according to the lawsuit, the women have a number of claims. I've been told a second woman has already told the city I'm going to be, you know, is already working through the system. And there's also a male supervisor that plans on going after them also, saying that those that wouldn't follow the system were retaliated against. And there's just really a culture of women don't belong here. But it'll have to. So I think this lawsuit is going to be one of many. And a lot of the allegations too were that there wasn't support. For example, she was in a custody hearing, and she said that the chief had said he'd write a letter saying these were her hours, and this is what was going on. When she asked him, he refused to do anything and have the department do anything. So then they tried to, I guess she faxed something herself using the police fax machine. So they took the case to the DA and tried to get her in trouble for faxing or something over using their fax machine of misuse of government property. But she was, again, trying to. I guess she has four sons. But there appears that this is going to go further. And this is just the beginning.
I do. I sit here. I probably like a lot of people. I sit here and I shake my head and I go, how can all this stuff go on in this crazy Central Coast area? I mean, somebody has to be doing something, right? They had an article in the paper today that said Ian Parkinson, they think, has got the department going a little bit better than it was going before. So there's that. Oh, wait, here's something else I want to clarify right here. You see, this is they had a picture here, and they had it on CNN. This is, they say, a kiss for the ages. It's a time-honored tradition at Navy homecomings. One lucky sailor has chosen to be the first off the ship, the long-awaited kiss with a loved one. On Wednesday, for the first time, the happily united couple were gay. Petty Officer Second Class Marissa Gaeta kissed her girlfriend of 2 years, Petty Officer Third Class, whatever hell her name is, in Virginia Beach. Can I say something?
Yeah.
There's no time-honored tradition that somebody gets to go off the ship first. You know who's the first one off the ship? Always the captain. That's the first guy that gets to set foot on dry land. And they don't take an enlisted man and say, here, you get to go off the ship for, or enlisted woman, whatever they are nowadays. You don't get to go off the ship first. You are so far back on the list of who gets off the ship first, you know, if you're an enlisted person. Oh, you got to be kidding me. That, it makes for a good story.
You know, I don't know what happens at Christmas time. All the news goes soft. Now, I haven't done that, and I've been getting chastised a bit for not acting like everything's rosy during Christmas. But you get a lot more story attempts to just try to write fluff and happiness. And
If we had some fun fluff, you know, on the Central Coast, and we could say, hey, guess what? Here's some fun fluff. Lately, we haven't had that. This story bothered me, and I'll tell you why, because I so often see this in the morning, because I live sort of out in the boonies, and you see these women that jog by themselves. And so here was this woman by Vachel Lane, you know, she's early in the morning, she's jogging by herself, and, I mean, I've known women that do it and said to them, are you not uncomfortable at all with the idea that you're just jogging by yourself, you know? I mean, The fact of the matter is, this woman was extremely lucky that she was able to fight off this guy that tried to grab her from behind. And, this is an interesting situation because he was on foot and she was on foot, which is kind of bizarre anyway. So often I think to myself, you know, somebody could just stop a van that fast, jump out, grab you and throw you in a van, and that would be it, you know. And oftentimes a woman's chance of fighting off a man is not going to work, you know, very well. So it's something that's it's always kind of been on my mind when I see these people jogging. I think to myself, I wish you'd do it in pairs.
I just think it's sad that you know what I mean? Because I think people like to jog when they want to jog and just go. And I think it's a sad commentary on our civilization. But I don't think that many people are grabbed. I think women jog, a lot of women jog all the time.
It's my daughter. She wouldn't be able to tell you that. All right. All right. Other things that are happening in our world and things that are going on.
Oh, one thing I haven't put up yet, I'll be putting up probably over the weekend. The Valerie Lane case is going to go to trial. The county tried to demur and claim, and demur is when you say the facts are correct, but it isn't allowable suit because of this. And their claim was that county mental health facility where mental health services facility where people spend the night, it's a hospital type thing, isn't a mental hospital. And under different codes, Jimmy Cameron wrote back, the county is required to have this and it is listed under the government code as a mental hospital, blah, blah, blah. So he ended up winning that one. But I read his response and it goes to court, I think, next Wednesday. And that was a woman brutalized at mental health. And the reason they're trying to claim it's not a mental hospital, because if it is, they're required to keep certain people separated. So if you're in there and you're just saying, okay, I'm depressed, I want to check in for a couple of days, or if you're a criminal they put in because you're out of control, you shouldn't be put in the same room.
Isn't the name County Mental Health sort of an indication of what they are?
Yes. Yeah, but
am I missing something?
But the funny thing was this: every once in a while you'll pull up a lawsuit battle, and you can tell one of the lawyers is just kind of having fun. And Jim McKiernan did win, you know, his response to DeMar, he did win, and the judge ruled that he was correct. But his response is hysterical. He starts out in a nutshell, and then goes, saying that this isn't a mental health facility, well, that's just crazy. And throughout this, he uses this terminology. I finished reading it just laughing.
But no, I mean, that's really pathetically ridiculous. I mean, that's what they're there for mental health. So guess what?
And, you know, I have seen them sign off on lawsuits that were ridiculous, absolutely ridiculous. And then you have this one, and the county is absolutely battling tooth and nail not to give this woman money for her injuries.
And this is so egregious, this situation, because they knew that the guy was a dangerous man. And it's not like it was some stranger that walked in and said, I'm having problems, I'm having a panic attack or something. Well, go sit in a cage and have a cigarette. It wasn't even a matter of that. It's a matter of knowing a person's background that walked through the door. And so... this is where this becomes just even crazier, and I agree with you. I don't know why they fight some of them and others they don't fight. It's just completely weird. That goes back to Jim Mulho. Billy was a bad boy years and years ago, and I had to take traffic school, and Jim Mulho taught it.
Oh, really?
Yeah, and then I happen to know Jim Mulho, not intimately, but we were at the Mid-State Fair. He was in charge of the sheriffs, and I was doing the announcing, and we were in the same building that year. So anyway, I always thought Jim was a nice man. But anyway, the interesting thing is he was talking about one time he said he was so mad because a guy had been speeding up Highway 1 in a convertible, and he was fleeing from the police. You know, they were chasing him. And so he was fleeing from the police. They got to the bridge abutment on Morbay Boulevard. They got to Morbay Boulevard, and the guy veered off the road and flipped upside down right where the bridge is and went skidding along. And this is he's in a convertible, mind you. So obviously he didn't come out of it very well, but he survived. And then he sued the city of Morro Bay. He sued Caltrans. He sued everybody in the world, the city of San Luis Obispo, the sheriff's department. He sued everybody because San Luis had started the chase. And so the sheriffs were then on it in the interim before they got to Morro Bay. So anyway, but they just signed off the whole thing.
And see, I noticed that. And I'm, you know, and some of those that are clearly disappear to be ridiculous, they'll sign off on. And then you have this woman with, you know, a video of her being just brutalized, and they don't want to take care of it. But I'm wondering if they're, you know, if they're worried about the amount of the settlement, or if there's other people that have been brutalized at mental health. Remember, there's just another one. There was a woman sexually assaulted at mental health.
Right, right. Well, that could be. I mean, you may be opening up a whole other can of worms by letting this one go. You know, by saying, okay, we're just going to sign off on it, we'll give you X amount of money. So maybe they're just trying to fight it. But, you know, it becomes, in a way, it becomes a little bit crazier because the more they, if I'm not mistaken, lawyers will go and negotiate with people and say, okay, we'll accept this amount of money. And then, you know, things just sort of go away. To do this, you know, whatever number is mentioned, you know, whatever number is named, that's what they're going to go after. And it's going to become big newspaper stuff and big Calcos News stuff, and it's going to become big everything news. So it's kind of like, excuse me, what are you doing? You know, why would you do it?
And why don't they comply? Why don't they start changing the way they run things there? I mean, would that be the answer? Is to also put into place one of the things that Jim McKernan is claiming in his response is that you have rules and regulations that you follow. You even have your own rules on how you handle people. Follow them. Make sure you separate these people. Make sure you watch better. Make sure you do what your rules say you're supposed to do. Wouldn't it be better to do that rather than have these lawsuits keep coming through?
Another thing that's really weird that's going on, talk about strange karma. Here they're going to get this special unit up at Atascadero State Hospital for the insanely insane.
Yeah.
And now they've had three attacks in the last 3 weeks. And it's like, what the heck is going on up there? We got a phone call. So go ahead and put on your headsets there, and we'll get a call. And we're going to say hello to Hello.
Oh, hi, it's Ann.
Hi, Ann.
I have a question. Maybe Karen knows. You know, the attacks that are going on in the Atascadero State Hospital, my assumption was that years ago that was the Atascadero State Hospital for the criminally insane, which means you're insane and you're criminally insane, and you're convicted for some crime, and you're locked up because you're crazy. You're not in the general prison population. So if you have a violent, crazy person, and they attack a nurse or someone working in the hospital, and then they talk about, well, he'll be charged with it. I mean, what are you going to do? You know, you take him back to court, and he's found crazy. Then they put him back into ASH.
Well, and actually, you know, if I'm not mistaken, the way the system now is the person can be admitted to ASH until they're considered okay, and then they go and they face a trial, and then they could end up being incarcerated as a criminal if they're found to be better. If I'm not mistaken.
And okay, I think I mean, some that, of them
yeah,
are charged.
I mean, the other, I mean, there's normal, I mean, I'm assuming, unless they're transferring a lot of people out of the state prison that really aren't crazy, they're just dangerous.
Well, remember the, I can't think of his name. This was in the New Times, I think, back in 2006. It was a gentleman that they didn't go after everything that he'd done. He had, I guess, done 5 or 6 rapes, and they only went after 1 or 2 enough to put him away. And somehow one of them he was able to get tossed out and to get out of ASH. And, I mean, this guy just had a long history, so they may be wanting to get more charges so that if someone that might get out at some point, then cannot.
But while they're in ASH, I mean, is everybody in ASH actually insane? Or have they got people there that are just mean as snakes? And
I don't think being mean. I think you're supposed to have some mental illness.
Where they'd have better training for command and control of somebody who's just lethal, you know.
Well, who's they got this guy now that they're looking at? He's going to be reevaluated again, and they're going to say, you know, this you know, the guy that killed his mother here a while back.
Right.
Okay, so they're trying to say, okay, do we're going to reevaluate, and it's like they're trying to say, well, you got to be crazy to do this because, you know, no normal person would do this. But then that falls into, you got to be crazy to do any crime. When you think about it, you know, I mean, you got to be not normal if you're going to go out and commit violent crime.
Yeah.
You know what I mean? It's hard. I don't know how they just differentiate that between. How do they differentiate between a psychopath that has absolutely no conscience and feelings, and he's going to go to state prison versus the guy that somehow they decide just doesn't have his wherewithal?
Well, I think that some of these people, it was schizophrenia. You see a lot of schizophrenia. People involved in different murders. For example, the body they're looking for in the county right now, the woman from Salinas, her son had schizophrenia. And sometimes when they're off their medicine, they can do just crazy things. I had a friend that had a brother with schizophrenia who had tried to kill him. And when he tried to kill him, the guy truly believed he was the Lamb of God and the world
right.
was going to end if he didn't kill himself.
Yeah.
He had tried to kill himself when his brother stopped him. He thought he had to kill his brother so he could kill himself. Kind of a weird...
Well, most schizophrenics are totally harmless and just very ill and, you know, need tremendous amounts of help and can live very normal lives if they're on meds with support. But when you think of, you know, there used to be regular mental hospitals for people who were very, very ill and needed in-house care. But ASH is a specific place for criminally insane people, which puts them, I think, in a very different category than the normal mental hospitals. And those are focused on therapeutic treatment, not just sort of...
And we really don't have a lot
of mental
hospitals. Watching
your back because somebody is just completely...
Most of the mental hospital left are actually short-term.
Yeah.
I know they don't claim, they haven't refiled this one here as a short-term, but people I don't think stay longer than 3 days.
Well, usually they're held to be evaluated. I mean, in the old days, there used to be places where you could get help for 30, 60 days, whatever you needed to get stabilized. Now they just throw you out.
Well,
back
no,
on the street
but,
in 10 minutes.
But wait a minute. This new unit they're putting in with these really bad people, these are people that are going to be out in 30, 60
oh,
days.
Oh, no, we're talking county mental health.
Oh, county mental health.
No, Tascadero. And I do think what they're doing is probably a much wiser way to handle this, to have, you know, instead of having just a set number, this many prisoners or patients with this many guards, they're going to have... This one unit, I think it's going to have something like 3 to 1.
Yeah.
And it's only going to have 7 of the most egregious, or no, 12 from around the state.
Yeah.
So it's, and then other, they're going to actually make other areas less guards per patients. So I think that makes a lot of sense.
Well, yeah, it does. And then if this is sort of going to be the magnet school for major serious dangerous people that are coming out of the prison population, then it seems to me you'd have to have a far different structure than any kind of, say, therapy or just warehousing or something. Because and they're being tossed out of prison Because presumably the prisons aren't trained to deal with these people, I'm assuming. Mm-hmm.
And thanks for your call today because I'm running out of time.
Yeah. Okay,
I appreciate
thanks.
It. All right. Let me just say, CalCoastNews.com, get there 24 hours a day, 24/7. You can find out what's going on. And in the upper right-hand corner, Talk is Cheap as A. You can click on that and listen to KYNS. And I thank you for joining us today.
CBS News, I'm Dan Rabin.
This is some good news just in the nick of time for the holidays.
President Obama has signed the extension of the payroll tax discount for 2 months. So paychecks will not suffer an extra 2% bite starting January 1st. That was approved by Congress this morning. CBS's Gary Nunn with details.
Payroll tax cuts, jobless benefits, and Medicare payments remain as is through February. House Speaker John Boehner.
Without objection, the bill is engrossed, read for a third time and passed, and the motion reconsider is laid on the table.
House Democratic Leader Steny Hoyer.
I am pleased that we have come together to make this agreement. This is a good Christmas present.
Stage is set now for a new round of negotiations in January to extend the deal through the new year. Gary Nunn, CBS News.
Now President Obama has taken off for Hawaii to join the First Lady and their two daughters. He stayed in Washington while the payroll tax deal was hammered out. This just in from Cambridge, England. Queen Elizabeth's husband, Prince Philip, has been taken to a hospital for tests while suffering chest pains. Last June, Philip turned 90. AAA says the number of Americans flying somewhere for the holidays is down by 10% from last year due to high airfares, but the number driving is up. The National Weather Service tells CBS News conditions are good almost everywhere, with the mountains of New Mexico a major exception. Another 16 inches of snow there yesterday, but parts of Interstate 40 near Albuquerque are reopening. Barbara Cordova works at the Red Lion Hotel in Grants.
Everybody that needed to get out going east left into Albuquerque. I don't know how far they were going to get from there.
At ski resorts such as Stowe Mountain Lodge in Vermont, snow is very welcome. Leslie Kilgore works there, seeing fresh snow.
We had a lot of man-made snow, which, you know, stayed on the trails, and then you didn't see much white down in town and outside of the resort. But now everything's covered, and it's snowy and very beautiful.
In California, a man has died after jumping out of an ambulance, breaking free from police, and running across Interstate 5. He was naked, acting erratically in the ambulance. His end came when he was hit by a truck. In Tustin, 35 miles southeast of downtown Los Angeles. Oil traders pushed up the price a little today, closing at $99.68 a barrel. It did go over 100, first time in 3 years. CBS's Pam Coulter.
Oil trading over $100 a barrel is a mixed bag. It signals a growing economy and more jobs. But analyst Peter Butel says the rising price is like a hidden tax.
Every penny at the pump takes $4 million a day away from the consumer.
And oil analyst Phil Flynn says it reflects concern about what's going on overseas in places like Iran and North Korea.
And the stock market had a positive day today. The Dow Jones has closed up 124 points. This is CBS News.
As if parents don't have enough to worry about these days, there's been a growing trend of kids having their identities stolen. Fortunately, Identity Guard KidSure now makes it easy to help protect your child's identity. KidSure uses patent-pending technology to search and monitor thousands of online data sources for information related to your child. If information is found that could be potentially harmful, you'll be alerted to it quickly. Even better, KidSure costs you less than $5 a month per child when added to your Identity Guard membership. Learn more about KidSure at identityguard.com.
Dear Kelly, we're so proud of the young woman you're becoming. You've been working very hard, and pretty soon, you'll go off to college. And when you do, we'll make you a deal. You keep up the grades, then we'll cover the tuition. Love, Mom and Dad.
When you give the gift of New York Life, you give the most selfless gift of all. Whole life insurance gives you the financial protection to help achieve your family's goals, in good times and bad. Contact your New York Life Insurance Company agent or visit us at newyorklife.com.
It's a big shopping day with Christmas day after tomorrow. At South Center Mall near Seattle, there was a fight over old-style footwear. Here's Tim Hake of KIRO Radio.
Hundreds of young people were in line hours before dawn for a chance to buy a pair of the retro Air Jordan Concords.
There's not that many for how many people's out here right now.
Why do you have to have it?
It's like an obsession. Jordan is the man.
There was pushing, shoving, and shouting. Extra officers were called in from Seattle for support, and once order was restored, customers were allowed inside the mall just a few at a time to pay $180 for the prized footwear. Tim Hake for CBS News, Tukwila, Washington.
New home sales increased last month, up 1.6% according to the government, but this is looking like the worst year on record for new home sales. The Commerce Department also reports on consumer spending, up in November only 0.1%. Dan Revive, CBS News.
Bonus round time. If you can't teach an old dog new tricks, what can you teach him?
Conversational French?
Correct.
Ooh.
Gingerbread men are...
Gingerbread boys, all grown up.
Correct. True or false? Netflix lets you watch movies instantly through your game console or other devices.
Duh. True.
Correct. Watch unlimited TV episodes and movies for only $8 a month from Netflix. See terms of use.
Hey, did I just win that new car over there?
No, I did. If you're like me, you have personal belongings that you hold dear. Belongings you can't live without. It's precisely why GEICO makes it easy to get renter's insurance for a really low rate. Renters can protect all their personal belongings for as little as $12 a month. What belongings do I hold dear? This karaoke machine and my vinyl record collection. You fancy a tune? Nah, I shouldn't. All right then. Are you going to Scarborough Fair?
Visit GEICO.com to see how affordable renter's insurance can be.
Looks like you're ready to do some honeydews. You've got a list, and what's with those knee pads?
I am ready to get her done.
Uh-oh.
We've got guests coming for the holidays, and Mom says we can't have any more plumbing problems like last year.
Yeah, I remember the kitchen faucet wouldn't stop dripping. The garbage disposal froze up at Thanksgiving, and the worst was when after dinner, your weirdo uncle wouldn't come out of the bathroom. What was that all about?
You know, don't even ask. It was ugly. And that's exactly why Mom's got me on the job.
Good thing you're starting early.
Pacific Coast Kitchen and Bath has pre-holiday sale pricing on no-drip top-quality kitchen faucets, super-efficient insinkerator garbage disposers, and powerful water-saving Toto toilets. To get sale pricing and an early jump on your holiday honeydews, go to Pacific Coast Kitchen and Bath behind Trader Joe's in San Luis Obispo.
Karen Scott Audiology has moved to a new location. She is now located at 3220 South Higuera, Suite 320, next to the DMV in San Luis Obispo, and now easy to find and plenty of parking. Stop in and see her at her beautiful new facilities. Karen Scott has been serving the Central Coast for over 30 years. Board certified, she and her staff understands the need to have your hearing checked. From your child to your teen, your mother to your grandparents, hearing loss can occur at any age. And it's nice to know that Karen Scott has the knowledge and experience to help you with all your hearing aid needs, with a wide selection to choose from. They also offer industrial screenings. Give Karen Scott a call today for your free consultation, 541-1790, or stop by 3220 South Higuera, Suite 320, next to the DMV in San Luis Obispo, helping you hear the things you love.
Some people are afraid to get an MRI because they think their only option is being put into a narrow tunnel. This is no longer true. San Luis Diagnostic Center just installed a new 3-Tesla ultra-high-field MRI system with an opening that is 40% larger and much shorter than other systems. Now even the most claustrophobic person can have an MRI without concern. It produces crisper, clearer images that can diagnose disease far earlier, and scans take half as long. As a diagnostic facility dedicated to outpatient care, San Luis Diagnostic Center strives to make sure your appointments are on time and at your convenience. When your doctor tells you you need an MRI, take control of your health care and call San Luis Diagnostic Center at 542-9700 before someone else chooses for you. All major insurances are accepted.
Hey, kids, remember lots of adults and kids, too, paid admission to enjoy the show. We must insist on absolute quiet.
It's movie madness time with Jim D and Bill Beck, and I thank you for joining us on this Friday. Hi, Jimmy.
Bill, how are you?
Hey.
Happy holidays.
Happy holidays. Merry Christmas. And I got in the other day. I made an issue of this. I started saying happy holidays because of Christmas and New Year's being next to each other.
Yeah.
But, see, now there's this big issue about you're saying people are saying happy holidays. It's politically correct because you're not including everybody, the Jewish people, and the people that are doing Kwanzaa and all that kind of stuff.
Happy Christmas, Kwanzaa, Hanukkah, New Year, solstice.
Thingy. All right. We got some great movies going on at the Palm Theater right now, and then we'll talk a little bit just about movies in general, what's going on out there in the free world. We save the Palm for last usually because we want it to be, you know, have a lot of impact.
Okay.
does that make any sense?
Okay. Sure.
Well, no, there's a lot of interesting movies out now, and there's the one movie that you mentioned that you say I don't want to see it. I don't want to see the girl with the dragon tattoo in a new form, but I will say this. I saw the girl interviewed on, you know, one of the TV shows, and she's a nice-looking girl, and they certainly have made her up to look hideous.
Well, that's the way she's supposed to look. Elizabeth Salander, the girl with the dragon tattoo, is, you know, goth to the max.
Yeah, yeah.
And if you look at the, what's her name, Naomi, oh, boy, I can't think of her, Rapace, who is the original.
Yeah.
You know, that's the way she's supposed to look, all leathered up and studs everywhere and piercings, but she's the most intelligent computer hacker on the planet. And, you know, she's essentially one of the greatest detectives on screen, even though she looks like, you know, a spiked goth person. But, you know, the reviews of the new version of Girl with a Dragon Tattoo are very good. Folks, running time is 2 hours and 40 minutes, but still... with Daniel Craig as the journalist Blomqvist. I don't know. I mean, it looks pretty interesting. It's just I've seen the first one or the first three from Sweden, and I'm, you know, it's like revisiting something I've seen before, but they say it is quite good.
Well, here's the thing, and I understand what you're saying. They redid Miracle on 34th Street. I never saw it. I say, excuse me, this is Miracle on 34th Street with Natalie Wood, and this is what I want it to be, and this is what it's going to be, and that's what it is.
Uh-huh.
So I've never seen another one. Although Turner Classic Movies showed something, I got at the very end of it, and I thought, God, I sure would like to get hold of this thing if I could ever see it again. And they had the silent version of The Wizard of Oz.
Oh, yes.
And I think it was called The Wonderful Wizard. I don't think Oz was even. It was just The Wonderful Magical Wizard or something it was called. And I saw just a little bit of it. And I thought, well, I had no idea that there was this thing from so far back, you know, that they had done it before. But I checked the Turner Classic schedule. It's like I don't know if they'll ever do it again. I've never seen it come up again. And you can go on the internet to their site and say, okay, what's going to come up on this month, you know, and you can see, and or you can go to a movie specifically, which I do with this one, and say, okay, is it going to be shown? You know, it's like it's in the dead letter office over there, so I don't know if I'll ever see it.
Well, you know, you go back to the silent era, and there were versions of lots of movies that I think there was a silent version of Peter Pan, of course, a silent version, I think, of Frankenstein. Of course, I go back to one of the most scary vampire movies ever, Nosferatu, which I think is scarier than almost any, you know, forget about this new Twilight Fangled stuff. Go back and watch Nosferatu, a silent movie, and it'll scare your pants off.
There's a movie. So now there's a movie now about silent movies, right?
Yeah, we got it at the Palm, and you know, still we have it. Well, the current date is January 20th. It's called The Artist. It's gotten, I think, the most Golden Globe nominations. It is a silent movie, and even though it's a French director, and I believe the lead is a French actor, I saw it at Toronto last September. It's really charming, a lot of fun. It is silent, black and white, and but a lot of American actors. James Cromwell has a big role in it. John Goodman is in it. Malcolm McDowell, a very quick appearance in it. But it's a nice homage to silent films, and it also covers that period that we saw in Singin' in the Rain, where the coming of sound really changed the whole thing. And it's a very charming movie, and people are, you know, well, I'll tell you. Originally, the distributor wanted to open it at the Palm on Christmas Day, and I said, yeah, I'm ready to show this. Well, now they're pushing it into January, and the most recent date they've given me is January 20th, and they better hold to that date, because that's what I'm putting out, January 20th for The Artist.
The Artist, January 20th, all right. Now, they say that they like the new, according to this, I'm using this review here, what is this thing called, Ticket? They went, hey, you know, I don't have any professional stuff. They have, they like Mission Impossible.
Yeah.
Mission Impossible. And I figure if Tom Cruise can jump out of that building or whatever.
Oh, you know, I saw the preview and I thought, okay, this is all computer done. No, he's actually hanging outside of that building. I wonder how much of an insurance policy they have on Tom Cruise when he's hanging outside the tallest building on the planet.
Why does he say, okay, I'll do that? I don't understand.
I don't know. He's I got to hand it to him at least for him doing his own stunts. But and, you know, the reviews of the new Mission Impossible are very good. I found it interesting that the director, whose name I don't know, previously did animation, Ratatouille, the really charming Pixar film he directed. So now he goes to live action. And this new Mission Impossible is supposed to be very entertaining, and the action is supposed to be fabulous.
One of the kids' favorites, Ratatouille. They really like that one.
Yeah.
Okay, so we got other good things going on. We have the they say the Steven Spielberg's Tintin is nicely done also.
Yeah. Again, they opened this one in Europe about a month ago, and of course the Tintin character is from Belgium or Austria or something, so it's hugely popular in Europe, and I think it was a smart move to open that film in Europe already. It's already made a gazillion over in Europe, and it has this sort of computer animation where it looks sort of real. It's sort of similar to Polar Express. And also the version of A Christmas Carol with Jim Carrey. Both of those were directed by Robert Zemeckis, who did the Back to the Futures. But, you know, it sort of looks halfway real, half fake. But I hear Tintin is really entertaining, and that opens on Christmas Day, I believe.
Here's a lady we're talking about. Dragon Tattoo is Rooney Mara.
Yes.
And boy, when you see her in this movie, you can't possibly imagine what she actually looks like. I'm telling you.
Yep. a lot of studs.
Now here was another one they gave 4 tickets to that I don't know. Maybe Matt Damon can do this well to make this thing a 4 ticketer. And what's the girl's name there? Scarlett.
Johansson.
Yeah. But this is that We Bought a Zoo thing.
Yeah, I think it's some family fair, and I forget the premise of it, but it looked, again, like a nice family film, and I saw a clip from it. I think Matt Damon was on Letterman or something. It looked kind of charming. So, I mean, when we go from that to Girl with the Dragon Tattoo to Mission Impossible, Tintin, War Horse, it seems like there's a nice selection
range
of movies
of stuff, yeah,
for all ages this holiday season.
I agree with you. I think there's some good things out there that'd be worth seeing. War Horse, though, although War Horse got 3 tickets as opposed to any 4, so I don't know how they decide these things exactly.
Yeah, well,
I never have figured out how they decide these things. And you're in the business of it. You don't know either.
No. I've been doing it for a lot of years, and to figure out audiences is a tough one.
I was watching, was it called Green Zone with Matt Damon the other day? And I just somehow, I don't know why the awards have eluded that man since, the very first thing he did with Ben Affleck.
Yeah.
I don't understand. He's an excellent actor. The movies that he's been in have been excellent thrillers.
Yes.
You know, it doesn't add up to me for some reason. I just don't get it.
Well, didn't he get the Oscar for what? Goodwill Hunting?
Goodwill Hunting,
I think he helped write that.
But then after that, you know, it's like, and he's been in great stuff.
Yeah.
But it's like, it doesn't matter.
He's in line. He'll get his turn at some point.
I
agree with you.
I think he's old and feeble, you know.
But I agree with you. I think he's a very fine actor.
Yeah, I think he is, too. All right, let's talk about some other things going on at the Palm. We have, you have No Movie Saturday, the 24th, because that's the way it is. But the box office will be open for last-minute gifts, so that's a great idea. You have individual Palm passes you can get. You have a 6-banger that's for 2 people that you can use for the whole year.
Mm-hmm.
And it's a great deal and a great idea for a gift. So I commend you for that idea and for having the box office open for 4 hours. So I'll be open tomorrow from 10 to 2.
Mm-hmm.
And really, people really appreciate Palm passes as gifts.
Oh, nice stocking stuffer. And it's our one day where we're sort of closed. Otherwise, we're open 364 days out of
the year.
All right. And open on Christmas.
You're actually open.
Yeah, we're open for 4 hours, and we do quite a bit of business on that Christmas Eve.
It's like the old thing about Denny's. If they're open 24/7, 365 days a year, why is there a lock on the door? Nobody has an answer. All right. Also, we have, this is, are you still doing two screens for The Descendants?
Yeah, it's something I've never done before, but I'm extremely grateful that people are coming out to see The Descendants. I actually feel extremely lucky that I'm the only theater in the entire, you know, area to have it. But even though, like we said, it's a pretty crowded field during the holiday time, and Descendants is really going through the roof for us. It's really wonderful. And then the day after Christmas, the week following Christmas, starting on Monday, we'll have extended hours. We will still have it on two screens, so it's pretty convenient for everyone to see. And everyone coming out of The Descendants, at least that I've seen, really likes it. George Clooney is excellent. It's Alexander Payne is the director, who did Sideways and a number of other films. And it's a real sweet film. It's, I would almost call it a drama comedy. And somebody just told me today they came out and they didn't feel so good. And I just thought, boy, you know, this, for me, it was a feel-good movie. It was very funny. There's things in it that get resolved very nicely. And about a father and two daughters. And, well, the wife is in a coma, so that's probably the down part. But it's still a very, very fine film.
So the two young people in this film, I mean, they're on camera quite a bit, yes?
Yes, they're
so they
great.
So they must be very good.
They're very good, extremely good. And, you know, I was actually asked today, you know, why is it rated R? And it's just for language. You know, the F word gets thrown around quite a bit in this film. But other than that, you know, the rating system is kind of goofy, and for this film, don't be scared away with the R rating, because it's language.
It was funny. The kids were watching, what are kids going to watch at Christmas time? Home Alone 1 and 2. I guess there's a third one, anyway. They're watching Home Alone. And I noticed that it was rated, it's rated G, I think it's rated G, but it says mild violence.
Yeah, mild?
It's not mild violence at all, but at the same time, it's comedic violence. They should have some way of saying, you know, it's violent, but it's comedy. You know, comedic violence, which is what it really is.
Yeah.
But otherwise, it's certainly violent.
Oh, it's real violent.
You know, and so that's kind of, you know, I don't understand the rating system either of all this, so that just doesn't make sense to me how they do.
Yeah, how many hits can Joe Pesci take?
Yeah, exactly. irons and everything else in the head. It's like, we are going to take a break and come back, because we have a couple more movies to talk about, The Palm.
Let's all go to the lobby. Let's all go to the lobby. Let's all go to the lobby to get ourselves a treat.
Delicious things to eat.
The popcorn can't be beat. The sparkling drinks are just dandy. The chocolate bars and the candy. So let's all go to the lobby to get ourselves a treat. Let's all go to the lobby to get ourselves a treat.
San Luis Obispo's Palm Theater is your ticket to cinema for the soul. Jim D's Palm Theater shows first-run film festival favorites for those who seek movie mastery that runs deeper than the overly hyped pedestrian fare. This marvelous intimate multiplex is known as the Slow Theater, where the prices and popcorn are the best in town. Green as a bean, the Palm is also the only solar-powered theater on the Central Coast. Across from the Palm Street parking garage, The Palm on Palm. Cinema for your soul. All right, if you don't have your dinner yet for tomorrow night, I don't know what you've been thinking about, but you still got plenty of time to get to Spencer's, because they're going to be open tomorrow from 7 a.m. till 7 p.m., and they'll be closed Christmas Day. So it doesn't matter if you want a ham, it doesn't matter if you want ribs, if you want a standing rib roast, if you want steaks, if you want pork, if you want fish, if you want a Mary's free-range turkey. They have everything in the whole wide world. They got all the appetizery stuff that you want. They got all the champagne that you want. They got all the booze and the beers and the soda pops and everything for the kids. They have the whole thing. And you can just put together just a great meal. You can go in the deli department, and they also have trays that you can get. So if you want meat trays or cheese trays or whatever you need, you can certainly do that. I just want you to know that the service is superb at Spencer's. You're really going to enjoy shopping there, and you're going to enjoy doing business with John Spencer. He's the best. Spencer's wishes you all a very, very Merry Christmas, and don't forget Spencer's, where freshness is local in 5 locations on the Central Coast. We're back with James. And we're talking movies today, and we're not messing around. We're going to take a break. We're going to take this unusual break here, because Jim brought in. And go ahead and tell us about this.
John Fahey, no longer with us, one of the most interesting, unique guitarists ever. He's sometimes compared to Leo Kottke, who's still with us, but does a lot of Americana and so on and so forth. But he put out a couple of Christmas albums, and they're, this goes way back, I think, to about the 80s. But they're some of my favorite Christmas albums. Very basic, very straightforward, solo guitar interpretations of great Christmas tunes. And I wanted you to have a copy.
All right, so he gave me a copy, and we're going to hear it right now. John Fahey is a guy that does that, and it's very pleasant. Thanks for sharing that with us.
Oh, you're welcome.
Jim, that's really nice stuff. Wait, you've got to pull down the right knob, or else it's going to just keep playing forever, you know, and they're never going to get back to the movies you're supposed to do. All right, let's talk about movies that we're doing. And so we have, we talked about The Descendants and how well that's doing. Then Force of Nature as a David Suzuki movie.
Yeah, he's the scientist who is probably quoted on a ton of these. Any science show, they usually have him quoting on whatever it is. But he's a really brilliant guy. He's made climate change a very important part of his agenda as far as getting it out there. And a lot of this film is about not a final lecture, but what he calls one of his great lectures. Gets into the history of how he got involved into science and so on and so forth. And the thing about this film, too, is it's very hopeful. I think he gives us hope on trying to, you know, face this challenge of, you know, whatever's causing it. I think it's humankind. But, you know, there's this controversy about climate change and what's causing it. But he's very hopeful in the fact that things that can turn around. And it's a very inspiring movie. It's not getting great attendance. I hope people will come see it, but it's very uplifting.
Well, and you know that's and it's interesting too to have a scientist actually come out and say, you know what, it can be okay.
Yeah, he's very helpful, but he does nail it in the fact that, you know, we've got some work to do to deal with these changes in our entire world's climate.
I stumbled across something on, it was HBO or one of those things, and they I think it's called The Migration. And it's fascinating. They just follow these birds that migrate some 3,500 miles and stuff, these different kinds of birds, and they used balloons, model airplanes, all kinds of stuff, so they could film them in flight, like right next to the bird.
Oh yeah, we it's called Winged Migration.
Winged Migration. Did you play that?
Oh, we played it at the Palm. We played it for a lot of weeks. It's one of those.
Fine.
Ones.
And I missed that.
I guess they also attach cameras to radio-controlled birds to get right up next to these, migrating geese. But what I love about that film is that, you know, we see migrating birds, but, you know, how far they migrate,
hundreds of miles.
And here's the funny part, Bill. When we showed that movie, people came out of that saying, man, my arms are tired.
I bet. You really.
Oh, that's a great, great film.
If you get a chance to find that somewhere, it's on one of the premium channels right now on this Charter.
That's out on DVD, and it definitely recommended.
Cool. Let's talk lastly about The Way.
Boy, The Way is our 12th week.
Wow.
This is the film with Martin Sheen. It's directed and written by his son, Emilio Estevez, and it has to do with this very traditional and ancient pilgrimage, this road where you go, you start in the south of France, and then you go through Spain, end up in northwest Spain in a town called Santiago de Compostela. This film has to do with the character that Martin Sheen plays is essentially taking the place of his son, who is also played by his real-life son, Emilio Estevez, who was going to go on this journey and dies. And I'm not giving anything away because this is at the beginning of the film. Martin Sheen in the film says, I'm going to take the journey that my son was going to take. And it has an interesting cast of characters. And I've had more people come out of this say they love it. And just the fact that we're in our 11th or 12th week with it is a testament to the fact that it has legs more ways than one.
I have to tell you something that happened. I just remembered it, and I was hoping I'd remember this. They had Christopher Plummer's in The Girl with the Dragon Tattoo.
Oh, yeah.
Okay, and so they were interviewing Christopher Plummer on one of these shows, you know, they yak at people at, and he totally gave away the end of the movie. I mean, he said, well, you know how, when this ends, like, and he says how it ends.
Ooh.
You know? And I think to myself, ooh.
Well, it has to do with his daughter,
yeah,
correct?
So I'm thinking, but they're not happy about that. You know, that interview didn't go so good.
Well, I will give it to the fact that The Girl with the Dragon Tattoo, the intricate story, it's sort of a detective story, is pretty incredible. It's quite, and even if you do know the ending, because you're searching for this daughter that he thinks is murdered and finding out how it happened or what happened. And so I hope I didn't give it away.
No.
But the books are extremely popular. There are three books, and this particular film is based on the first book.
Let me see if I can get them. I can only remember two. Girl with Dragon Tattoo, mm-hmm. Somebody Threw a Rock at the Hornet's Nest.
The second one is called The Girl Who Played with Fire. The third one is called The Girl Who Kicked the Hornet's Nest. Yeah. And they've all been filmed in Sweden, so if you want to see the entire trilogy, you can. The new one's getting pretty good reviews, but I'll stick by the Swedish ones.
I would bet the trilogy's probably for sale. Box set?
Oh, yeah, they're all available.
Well, here's what else is out in stores now. And so guess what's I'll be interested in seeing how much this sells is Midnight Paris. It's just coming out in stores.
Oh.
And what else is out there? Dolphin Tale, which I think I didn't see it, but I just the idea of the fact that it's another one of these heartwarming affairs, you know, where they save the dolphin by making a phony tale. It's kind of cool. And then as soon as you throw Morgan Freeman in, you're going to at least get, you know, some money back out of it.
Morgan, the voice.
Thing That You Gave Me, Margin Call, is in the news. Straw Dogs is in the back out. Now, here's the thing. Dustin Hoffman's Straw Dogs, which I found to be a very bizarre movie anyway, but it's a Sam Peckinpah, so you got to know that it's going to be bizarre.
Mm-hmm.
But it was even just completely bizarre. And after, if I'm not mistaken, I think that's the movie he did after The Graduate.
Yeah.
I think it is. And so after seeing The Graduate, somehow I was thrown for a loop to see him in this character, you know. It's just somehow didn't work for me yet. And so, and of course, it's an ugly kind of a movie anyway. So,
well, you nailed it, Bill, because I think the original Straw Dogs, I haven't seen this remake, but of course, these days when something bad happens to you, it's like the whole revenge, vengeance thing.
Right,
you want to see the bad guy really take it, you know? I think the original Straw Dogs, I think what Sam Peckinpah was really trying to do, and he succeeded, is that revenge is extremely ugly. It's not pretty. And even here's, you know, Dustin Hoffman defending himself and his wife and everything against these horrible people in Ireland, I believe it is.
Right.
And but I think what that film does is the fact that, you know, revenge and getting, you know, vengeance is not a pretty thing. And I think Peckinpah really succeeded in getting that across in this movie, that it's you know, revenge. Oh, yeah. No, not in this movie. So I don't know what the new one did, but as far as getting that across. But, you know, revenge is not a pretty thing.
We have someone calling us on the telephony. Let's get on the phone and say hello. Hello?
Oh, hi. It's Ann again. Hi, Jim.
Hi, Ann. How are you? Merry Christmas.
Oh, fine. Hey, listen, I wanted to thank you for playing Melancholia.
Hey, you're one of the few who enjoyed that movie. I had people coming out just really upset. And I don't know if you know what's, you know, Lars von Trier, the director, does not have a real happy viewpoint of the human race, so he considered it a very happy movie because the world ends at the end of it.
Well, you know, the interesting thing, I thought a lot about that movie. He needed a really tough editor, unfortunately. He just, you know, that kind of European auteur that gets so full of himself he doodlebugs off until he falls off the cliff.
Oh, yeah.
I mean, there were points of it where he was like, oh, my God, I hope this planet hurries up and crashes because it's getting so boring. But if you... Kind of, the more I thought about that film, he had done some extraordinary things. He did the foreshadowing, the symbolic dream image foreshadowing at the beginning.
Yeah, he shows you pretty much the movie.
With those incredible images. And then he almost illustrates those images at the end.
Mm-hmm.
But it was also incredibly hopeful in a sense that the Kirsten Dunst is almost the goddess figure who builds the teepee and guards this family to the end to shield them from the terror.
Yeah,
so it was in that way a loving ending gesture from almost a Kuan Yin kind of Buddha, the calm protective sort of imagery.
Yeah.
So it was really, I found the way he had done that. It just, he needed to shorten it way up in the middle and kind of keep focused. I think he just rattled off.
Yeah, it was almost like two movies because the first half takes place of the very dysfunctional families at the wedding. But I think that he illustrates the point that our species has a hard time, you know, getting along and, you know, we're ready to be extinct. But on a grander scale, I tend to think that, you know, Lars von Trier, it probably says, you know what, there's going to be a time when the sun burns out, you know, not that that's this movie. And, you know, the human species is going to be extinct at some point in the future, no matter how you think about it. We may go to that new planet that they discovered. But on the other hand, you know, when you really think about the human species and how long are we going to be on this planet? Not forever.
But what was the most powerful imagery? One was the foreshadowing of Kirsten Dunst like a colossus with the electricity coming out of her hands.
Yes.
In other words, immense power.
Mm-hmm.
And at the end, that the immense power was really love to guard and keep her nephew and her sister from the worst of the horror. In other words, death was coming.
Yes.
But instead of panicking and everything, she basically said, stay calm, it's okay,
mm-hmm.
I will guard you.
Yeah, she accepted it. I think she was the one where the planet was going to hit the Earth. And instead of, you know, where are you going to go? And she seemed to accept, in fact, that once the nude scene in the film where she's sort of basking in the glow of this planet, I think she just embraced the fact that, you know, it was the end of the world. And, of course, if you want to take it to another level, we're all going to go there. We're all going to die. And however you want to accept that or explain
and
it.
And how you do it at the end.
Yes.
Because she was the one with both power and tremendous grace.
I agree.
And she gave that gift to the one she loved. So in a way, it was very moving and very hopeful. Because as a smaller metaphor, it's like, we're all going to die, how we do it.
Yeah, I agree with you.
Well, with 7 billion of us on the planet now, I suspect we're going to eat each other.
Well, yeah. Plus, like I say, visually, it was just, it was pretty amazing. He was doing some really, really interesting stuff, and his storytelling, it kind of reminded me a little bit of Days of Heaven, where you were telling this story through moving pictures.
Yeah, and did you see Take Shelter?
Yes.
Yeah, a kind of a companion piece for Melancholia.
Excellent film. I really, you know, enjoyed that. Yeah, but I could understand why people could run from Melancholia screaming from the theater.
And they did.
And I could say, it was just undisciplined that he needed somebody to give him by the scruff of the neck and say, pay attention to what you're doing, Lars.
But however, from what Jim said about it and what you're saying about it, let's say he did shorten it up. It would still
it
sort of have...
It wasn't a matter of shortening. It was judicious
editing
to stay on message, stay on point.
Mm-hmm.
But you're still going to come away with...
Some of what happens with auteurs, it happens with artists, they fall in love with their scribble marks, and everything becomes precious.
Yeah.
And so they, well, let me see, here's this scribble mark. Let me show you another one. Oh, here's another one. Oh, isn't this beautiful? And after I say, get on with it. Thank you. We understand. Move along. So that's the discipline of an artist, and he was kind of undisciplined in that sense.
Well, yeah. I appreciate your take on it and the fact that you saw it. We had, the typical, or my viewpoint of Melancholia was a love-hate movie. Some people thought it was absolutely brilliant, and some people went, what in the world was that? So.
Well, it was both. It was an astounding failure. Or a brilliant mess.
There you go.
Yeah,
right there.
So it was both a love and a hate thing. But anyway, but it was great. It was great. Only the Palm Theater would bring this movie so people could see it.
Oh, well, thanks for coming to see it, Ann.
Thank you.
Thanks, Ann. Appreciate it.
And have a great holiday.
Merry Christmas.
Both of you.
Thank you
Merry
very
Christmas.
Much. Merry Christmas, Ann. All right. That's right. The Palm, the only solar power theater going on right now. And the prices are good, and the popcorn's great, and the soda pops are good. Jim doesn't put too much of the fizz in there. He keeps it as a natural soda. Can you determine how much fizz you put in a soda?
Yeah, we got a CO2 tank right there.
So
and,
you decide how much fizz to how much stuff?
Well, the Coca-Cola people figure that out, but I think we're okay.
I think you are, too. No, because sometimes you go to a place, you go, what happened to this thing? That doesn't happen at the pump there. Give us some idea in the new year. What you got? Some? Can you give us any little previews of stuff that might be coming up besides the one January 20th?
The Artist, and then again a very provocative film that we talked about in the last few weeks called Shame, and I think that's going to pop up on some awards list. The main character Michael Fassbender is brilliant in this film, but it is, as I mentioned, the word is provocative. It's an NC-17. It's under 17, not admitted, and rightfully so. And it's a very striking film that talks about the main character who is hooked on porn and prostitutes, but he is incapable of love. He's incapable of intimacy. And it's interesting, viewpoint of people today who are maybe hooked on their gadgets, or people seem to be able to engage with their gadgets a heck of a lot more than people. In this case, it's almost as if sex for this guy is a punishment. He hasn't learned to love and to be intimate. And it got a very good reaction at the film festival. It's getting very good reviews. But the closest film I can compare it to, I was thinking of Last Tango in Paris. And it's different than that, but it's a very interesting message in this film. And it's not, sex and provocative stuff for the sake of titillating the audience. It really has a fine message. I don't think it's going to... I mean, kind of like Melancholia, what Anne was talking about, it's not going to be a favorite of a lot of viewers, but it does get its point across very well in the fact that some of us are extremely lost in this, sex-soaked world that we lived in.
And the other thing that's kind of interesting, too, is, we call it, what do they call it now? You have sexophobia. What do they call it now? You have, you're addicted to sex. So they have some name for that now that you got. Now there's a medical clinical thing that you have.
Huh.
But it just used to be called hedonism.
Oh, there you go.
And that's what people, that's what this guy is probably about, and I have met, this sounds like a weird story, but I had met someone and had a conversation with a person, and I thought, this guy has no connection really with what he's talking about, like exactly what you're talking about with this movie. This guy doesn't care if it's male, female, plant, animal, it doesn't matter to him. You know, it's just all one thing to the guy. And I thought, you know, what a strange guy, of course. But, you know, beyond that, it was like that has to be a very strange way of looking at life, you know.
Yeah. And, well, he's almost, you know, when I think back at the film, because I did see it, he's almost like a victim. It's almost as if he can't feel. Why is that? I mean, why can't he connect with going out on a date and just having a nice time with a woman? He can't. There's something missing.
You know, I generally defend, and I don't know why I do. I don't want to be like my father and say, well, that's a ridiculous thing. You know, that's going to go away. I don't want to do that to myself. But here's the thing. So I generally defend the fact that we have all of this technology now, and we can communicate by texting and all that.
Mm-hmm.
And I just say, that's just that. Guess what? That's what we've come to. That's the way the industrial revolution that led to the electronic revolution is going. That's part and parcel to the destiny that we are in. And yet you said that's an interesting thing the way you said it, because what's interesting is you're not while you are interacting with people via text message. You're not really interacting with people. Do you know what I mean by that?
I do.
You're just saying things to each other back and forth, back and forth, back and forth. But it almost makes me wonder, okay, now take the two people that are doing all this texting and put them in the room together, and how much conversation are they capable of having?
Exactly. And, you know, just recently, I don't know why this hit me in such a way, but, you know, we're so-called in the real world. I'm looking right at you here, and I see you. But the internet and the places where they text and their iPhones, that is actually another place. It's a place where friends hang out,
even though they don't
see each other. They can't physically touch each other, but it is an actual other place. You know, it's another realm, so to speak.
Right.
And to think of it as imaginary is untrue. It's real.
It is real.
In an unreal way. Oh, what do I just say?
Hey, that's all right. You know what I mean? We're just going to age gracefully fine. Thank you very much. I don't need one. All right, sir. We thank you for coming in today. Jim, I'm really glad I had a chance to see you before Christmas. I want you and your wife to have a very Merry Christmas.
Oh, we will. I'm looking forward to it.
All right, sir.
Thank you.
And I was going to say something else to you, but I'm stumbling now and falling and failing and saying just thanks for coming in.
Oh, my pleasure. Always good to see you.
Okay.
Happy holidays and happy New Year's from your neighbors at Thai Diva. No matter how you and your family celebrates the holiday season, there is one common thread that runs through all celebrations, and that is the love of family and community. Let's enjoy these times we have together. Your friends at Thai Diva share in that spirit of hope to serve you in the coming year. Happy holidays.
During this time of celebration, we at eLegal Services, Inc. turn to our clients with warm appreciation. eLegal Services would like to take this time to thank the local law firms for the support that has made our progress possible this year. It is this time of year that we reflect on everything we hold special: family, the Central Coast, and the wonderful relationships we treasure. Whether you celebrate Christmas season or Hanukkah, we wish you the best. And here's to a happy new year from eLegal Services, Inc.
The time of year we've waited for is here with joy and cheer galore. But if you've not much time to shop, then come to Kohl's. In just one stop, you'll pick up something to make espresso, a warm wool coat, a toy from Play-Doh, a diamond that will touch her soul, a bold new fragrance from Kenneth Cole. One trip to Kohl's and you'll have reason to sit back, smile, and enjoy the season.
Hurry into Kohl's last-minute gift sale Thursday through Saturday. Earn $10 Kohl's cash for every $50 spent. With the perfect gifts at the perfect prices, you'll love to give and be happy to save. Kohl's, expect great things.
Happy holidays. Welcome to REI. Can I help you?
Long list of people to shop for. First I need
a Patagonia down sweater.
Perfect. And then a pair of
Sorel Joan of Arctic women's boots.
Love it. And also a
REI Traverse 30 pack.
Well, that takes care of me. Now onto my list. We know what you need and have all the outdoor gifts they'll love. With expert help in-store and online, we offer 100% guaranteed satisfaction with every gift you buy. Visit your local REI or REI.com. REI. Find out.
Thank you.
see trees of green, red roses too. I see them bloom for me and you. And I think to myself, what a wonderful world. I see skies of blue and clouds of white, the bright blessed day, the dark sacred night. And I think to myself, what a wonderful world. Yes, I think to myself, what a wonderful world.
I think to myself, it's a wonderment world. All right, that's it. That's it for now. Have a very, very Merry Christmas, please. And we'll get together on Tuesday after the holidays. Until then, my other trails, be happy ones, and don't believe everything you hear here. Because
this is Talk is Cheap. The game is over. The Friends and Neighbors Network.
Game over.
With Bill Benica.
Bye, 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 bye. Happy trails to you.
Again.
CBS News, I'm Dan Revive in Washington.
I want to wish everybody a Merry Christmas, Happy Holidays.
President Obama has left for vacation in Hawaii after signing an extension of the payroll tax discount so there won't be an extra 2% bite on paychecks starting